Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Parshat Chukat. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as a Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
This week's Parsha is Parshat Chukat. In a previous podcast, I mentioned the Netziv's introduction to the Book of Bamidbar, where he says that the essence of the book is the transition from the generation that left Egypt to the generation that entered the land of Israel. That transition occurs in our parsha. Let us begin by examining chapter 20. Chapter 20, verse 1. And the children of Israel, the whole congregation, came to the Zin desert in the first month. They settled down in Kadesh. Miriam dies there, and she is buried there. And there is no water to the congregation. And they gather upon Moshe and Aaron. And the people strive with Moshe, saying to him, "Would that we have died in the death of our brethren before God. And why have you brought the congregation of God to this desert to die there, we and our cattle?" Verse 5. "Why have you brought us up from Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It is not a place of seeds, of figs and vines, of pomegranates. There is no water to drink." The first thing that I would like to note is, when is this happening? It says in the first verse, in the first month. But which year? And all of the commentaries note, this is happening in the 40th year. Why does it say the Jewish people, the whole congregation? Rashi notes, the whole congregation is saying, this is a new congregation, a new generation. The death of the generation that left Egypt has been completed. And now this is the new generation in its entirety that is ready to enter the land of Israel. I find it fascinating that most of the stories that we have seen relate to what happened to the Jews when they immediately left Egypt. One could say in the first year and a half of leaving Egypt, we are told nothing of what happens in the next 38 years. It's as if those 38 years were like a dream that went by so quickly. And all of a sudden, we are told of what is happening now in the 40th year with this new generation. On a certain level, there is the sense of déjà vu. Things have not changed. There are a number of stories of difficulties which arise in the desert, in the book of Shemot, in the book of Bamidbar, and where the knee-jerk reaction of the Jewish people is to complain. And the first picture we have of this new generation in the 40th year that is about to enter the land of Israel. No water? Immediately they complain. I would like to first examine this story and then compare it with another story in the book of Shemot. First thing, the section begins by telling us of the death of Miriam. In a number of podcasts over the past few weeks, I have been speaking about the unraveling of Moshe's authority. In our parsha, we basically have not only the end of the generation that left Egypt, but we have the ending of their leadership as well. The Jewish people have three leaders who played a major role in the Exodus: Moshe, Aharon, and Miriam. In our parsha, In chapter 20, we have the death of Miriam. Subsequently, in the parsha, we are told of the death of Aaron. This is in chapter, at the very end of chapter 20, from verses 23 onward. In our parsha, we are also told of the decree that Moshe will die in the desert. So that our parsha is really highlighting this transition, not only in terms of the generations, but in terms of the leadership. And it's done in a graduated way. First, there is the death of Miriam. Then there is the death of Aharon. We are told in our parsha that ultimately Moshe will die in the desert. But as we all know, he only dies at the very end of the book of Deuteronomy. There is a rabbinic comment that says that in the merit of these three leaders, the Jewish people were given three gifts in the desert. The merit of Miriam brings the Jewish people water. The merit of Aharon, bring them the clouds of glory. And in the merit of Moshe, they have the manna, the man. And the rabbis actually see this idea in our parsha based on the juxtaposition between the death of Miriam and the fact that there is no water to the congregation. If we think about these three gifts which were given to the Jewish people, Miriam is the one who brings them water. Water, which is the most essential element of life. If we think back, the first picture we have of Miriam is when Moshe is put in the ark, in the river, and she is waiting there on hold to see what will happen. In many ways, Miriam is the one who gives life to Moshe at the river, who in the end converts that river, which was a death place for many Jewish babies, into a source of life for Moshe, which ultimately becomes the sign of life, the redemption of the Jewish people. Aharon is connected with the clouds of glory. The clouds of glory that hover above the tabernacle, that highlight that God's presence is dwelling among the Jewish people. The clouds of glory that are an expression of God's compassion, of God's protection of the Jewish people. The role of Aharon is to work in the tabernacle to bring about atonement, to somehow guarantee that the presence of God will always be in the midst of the Jewish people, to appeal to a presence which is compassionate rather than vindictive. I perhaps could add that the clouds of glory, by the very name, reflect a sense of dignity, so that Aharon becomes a model to the people of dignity, of maximizing their human grandeur. And Moshe brings the people the man, the substitute for bread, heavenly bread. And perhaps what Moshe shows to the people, according to the language of the verse in Deuteronomy chapter 8, that not on bread alone does man live, but rather on that which comes out from the utterance of God. Moshe's legacy to the people is to bring them the word of God, to make them realize that the whole world rests on the Word of God. How God at any moment can utter something and create, so that the people are supposed to realize how much every facet of their existence is really dependent upon God. The other side of the coin is that once God provides us with the raw materials, it is up to us to shape them, to develop them, so that Moshe becomes this model, through the man, of humility and majesty. The same Moshe who is described as being the most humble of people, who is the loyal servant of God, in chapter 12, in Numbers, is the same Moshe who, when he comes down with the second set of tablets, is radiating, is beaming, to the point where the people are in awe of Moshe. He generates utter majesty. That is the gift which he gives to the people, the dialectic of humility and majesty. This is the meaning of the man. Let us go back to our story. When Miriam dies, there is a loss. And it is very interesting that the Torah does not say anything, elaborate on her death, on her burial. It would have been very natural for us to expect that there would have been a line which would have said, Miriam died, and the people bemoan her death. The people cry. We find similar expressions when Aaron dies, when Moshe dies. Rather than the people crying, appreciating the sense of loss, the people become very self-absorbed with their lack of water. And as I mentioned earlier, when we look at the response of the people, the new generation, it seems very similar to what we've seen in the previous generation. The people gathering upon Moshe and Aaron, a similar expression to what we had in last week's parsha, Parshat Korach. The sense of an unruly mob, a mob that is somehow dictating to Moshe and Aaron what needs to be done. The striving, which we will come back to. Note the fact that there may be certain positive elements. The people do speak about dying before God. They speak about their brethren. The people speak in verse 5, why did you take us up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? The evil place is the desert, not the land of Israel, as we had in the story of the spies. But what's interesting to note is that you have a new generation which perhaps is acting the same way as the previous generation. And then when they come before Moshe and Aaron, what is the response of Moshe and Aaron? In verse 6, they come before the congregation to the entrance of the tent of meeting. They fall on their faces, which we could understand as an expression of prayer. And then the glory of God appears to them. And now let's look at what God says. Verse 8. Take the staff, gather the congregation, you and Aaron, and speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will give forth its water. And you will bring to them water from the rock, give them to drink. And Moshe takes, verse 9, Moshe takes the staff from before God as he was commanded. And they gather the people before the rock. And now let's read this carefully. Verse 10. And Moshe says to the people, Shimuna, which could be translated as, please listen, or listen now, Hamorim, you rebels. Haminasel hazeh, from this rock. Notzi lachem mayim, will we bring forth water? And then in verse 11, and Moshe raises his hand, and he hits the rock with his staff twice. And lots of water come out, and the people drink, and their cattle. And God's response to Moshe and Aaron in verse 12, because you did not have faith in me, lo he'emantem bi, to sanctify me before the eyes of the Jewish people, you will not bring this congregation to the land which I have given them. Two things to note. First, by God's reaction, it is clear that Moshe and Aaron sinned, and that they are about to be punished for that sin. Second question, what was the gravity of their sin, which dictated such a harsh punishment? Anyone who reads this section seems to feel there is an incompatibility between the crime and the punishment. Let us go back to what God had told Moshe to do. God told Moshe to take his staff and speak to the rock that it should give forth its water. Hence, we have one comment which says, what was the sin of Moshe? Moshe should have spoken to the rock and not hit the rock. In fact, Rashi brings a comment that says that the problem was that Moshe and Aaron actually spoke to the rock and it didn't bring forth water. And they said, perhaps you have to hit it. In the same way that in a previous story, which we will look at in a moment, in the book of Shemot, in chapter 17, verse 6, they hit the rock. And when they hit the rock, a few drops came out. So they hit it again. And then the water started gushing out. According to Rashi, their lack of faith that when they began speaking, nothing happened. And rather than continue to speak, they decided to hit the rock. And when they hit the rock, it was only dripping. So they hit it another time. That series of actions reflected a lack of faith. And for that reason, they are told that they will die in the desert. A number of commentaries bring up numerous explanations as to what was the sin of the people. And maybe I'll mention a few of them. One explanation is that, which the Rambam Maimonides says, is that Moshe and Aaron were angry. If you look at the language that they use and somehow try to see the nuances, you can sense the anger which is between the lines. Anger is a very pernicious quality, inappropriate for someone who's a leader. In the Talmud, it speaks about anger being tantamount to idolatry. And hence, Maimonides says, it is that type of behavior, losing their patience with the Jewish people and expressing it in such a hostile way, that is the reason that they are being punished so severely. Connected with that explanation is another one that's given, which is they're saying to the people, listen, you rebels. A very pejorative way of speaking to the people. Interestingly, Nachmanides does not like these explanations and says that we find in other places in Deuteronomy where Moshe calls the people rebels. And that seems to be appropriate. It's a way of Moshe rebuking them, putting them in their place, as a way of somehow making them appreciate the problematic behavior which they are displaying. Similarly, Nachmanides feels It never says explicitly that they are angry. So that, according to Maimonides, the essential problem, the essential sin, is lacking, is missing from the book. Furthermore, we find in a number of places that Moshe gets angry. God gets angry. Last week's parsha, Moshe is angry, angered by the words of Datan and Aviram, and says to God, do not accept their offering. We don't find that God is upset with Moshe. If anything, God reinforces his words. Another explanation which is offered. When Moshe and Aaron say, from this rock will we bring forth water, Rabbeinu Hananel, they don't mention God. And therefore, when the water finally comes forth, there's the very real possibility that the people will say, it is Moshe and Aaron who have brought forth the water, and not God. And therefore, they will have caused this obstacle to come to the people. Rather than ascribing what happened to God, they will ascribe it to Moshe and Aaron. Rather than this being a sanctification of God's name, it will be a monument to the name of Moshe and Aaron. So that this is a desecration to the name of God. It is clear that the sin of Moshe and Aaron is very unclear. Many explanations, I would even add, all of which have an element of truth. I mentioned earlier that there is a parallel story to our story in the book of Exodus. When the Jewish people begin their journeys in the desert after they've crossed the Red Sea, in chapter 17, verse 1, we're told, and the congregation, the whole congregation of God, comes to a place called Rephidim, where they camp. And there is no water to give the people to drink. And then it says, similar to our section, and the people strive with Moshe. And they say, give us water to drink. And Moshe's response is, why are you striving with me? Why are you testing God? And note the fact that in the next pasuk it says the people are thirsty. They once again complain upon Moshe. Why have you taken us out of Egypt to kill us and our flocks in this thirst? It sounds very similar to our section. In fact, I would even add, in certain ways, our section is worse. Because in our section, it says, the people have gathered upon Moshe and Aaron. In our section, the people say, why did you bring us to this evil place? And if we go back to Shemot, in verse 4, Moshe cries out to God, what will I do with this people? Very soon they will stone me. And God's reaction is, pass before the people, take the elders with you, and take the staff, which you used to strike the river, the Nile. And then God says to him in verse 6, hit the rock, and water will come out, and the people will drink. And we're told, so did Moshe do before the eyes of the elders. If I go back to the comment which Rashi made, in this previous story, Moshe was told to take the staff and hit the rock. And he did it. The water came out. In the end, there's a happy ending to the story. And in our story, there is a tragedy that happens. And Rashi says, because Moshe was told to speak to the rock, not to hit it. But the question is raised. But Moshe in our story was also told to take the staff. What purpose is there in taking the staff, if not to use it? And isn't it reasonable that Moshe would come to the conclusion, even though he was told, speak to the rock, that in fact, he ultimately needs to hit the rock. I would like to present an idea discussed by Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, which is fascinating and is very important educationally. Moshe's interaction with the rock is symbolic of his interaction with the people. And there are two different ways in which he can interact. By use of the staff, by the power of speech. In the story in Shemot, when the Jewish people first leave the land of Egypt, God tells Moshe, take the staff and hit the rock. And God also emphasizes the staff that you used to strike the Nile. The staff is the symbol of Moshe's authority. Authority slash power. And initially, that is the image that God wants Moshe to project. It is important to consolidate his rule, his authority, vis-a-vis Pharaoh, vis-a-vis the people. When Moshe strikes the Nile, it demonstrates his superiority over the Nile. When Moshe strikes the rock, it is a message to the people who test God, who strive with Moshe. Accept the authority of God. Accept the rule of Moshe. At that point, the only way that Moshe can establish himself is through his authority, through this exercise of force. That is the language that the people understand or need to understand. That is true in terms of the generation that left Egypt, a generation that grew up in slavery. But in our parsha, we are speaking of the new generation, a generation that has grown up in the desert, that has witnessed day in, day out, the miracles of God. And hence what God says to Moshe is take the staff, which is the symbol of your authority, but don't exercise it. What should you do? Speak to the rock. As a way of saying, your relationship to this new generation should be one of dialogue, of speech, not of authority. When Moshe hits the rock, it is because Moshe feels this new generation is no different than the old generation. And we could perhaps understand Moshe's mindset. After the Jews have been wandering for 40 years in the desert, a whole generation has died. A new generation is poised to enter the land of Israel. The first picture we have of that new generation, deja vu. The first thing which we see, there is no water, they gather upon Moshe and Aaron. It's as if nothing has changed. I always feel that I can empathize with Moshe. The sense of utter frustration. After 40 years and having a new generation, it's as if we're back to square one. And as I mentioned, over the last few weeks, there seems to have been this erosion of Moshe's authority. So that is very understandable that Moshe feels he has to somehow reassert his authority. And God's response to Moshe is, you did not have faith in me. And there's a very interesting message over here. Moshe's lack of faith in the people perhaps is a reflection of his lack of faith in God. had Moshe had absolute faith in God, that would have given him greater faith in the people. It is very interesting that when Moshe is first given his mission in the very beginning of the book of Exodus, at the burning bush, that there is this back and forth negotiation, argument between Moshe and God, where Moshe refuses to take on the role. And in chapter 4, at the very beginning, Moshe says to God, "But the people will not believe me when I come and tell them that God has remembered his people and wants to now take them out of Egypt." At the very outset, Moshe seems to have this lack of faith in the people. It's true, he says, the people will not believe me, but that reflects that he does not have faith in the people. There is much truth to what Moshe has to say. The people are problematic, they are difficult. But faith is the ability for one to see beyond the reality, to have a vision, to be able to see an ideal and to work towards that ideal, to perhaps believe that if this is the ideal, it will happen. The people are a problematic people, but they have the capacity to rise to the occasion. How do you bring them from where they are to the ideal? A lot of sweat and tears. A lot of patience. This is a very important educational lesson to parents and teachers. I always say this to myself in both capacities in which I operate. Being a parent or a teacher can be a very frustrating job. Very often you will encounter students, children, who you try to instruct, who you try to somehow guide, and where it's very clear what should be done. And not only that, but where it seems it should be very clear to them what should be done. And yet they just shoot themselves in the foot. They just don't get it or don't want to get it. Where very often it's much easier to complain rather than to take charge of oneself. There may be many situations where there is ingratitude, where people are just critical and are not able to appreciate the good which they have. It takes a tremendous amount of vision and patience, faith, to be able to somehow not exercise force, authority, but to pursue the path of dialogue. When Moshe and Aaron showed that this generation seemed to be no different than the previous generation, and if I perhaps state this in a very extreme way, when they write off the new generation, then God's response is, you cannot be the leadership of that generation. Children, students, need a teacher who can somehow understand them, who can accept them, who can relate to them, who doesn't just write them off. This is the tragedy of Moshe and Aaron, who in the end die in the desert because they're unable to adapt, to have that generous spirit to bear patiently the foibles of their people. There has been a change in this new generation. And the proof is that eventually they do enter the land of Israel. They follow Joshua. They are able to conquer the land, to settle the land, to be faithful to God. It is true that it is not sustained for an extended period of time. But there has been a change. Moshe and Aaron are unable to see that change, to adapt to the different reality, and hence they cannot be the leadership of that people. As I mentioned, This is an important lesson for all of us. As frustrating as it may be to be a parent or a teacher, it is important to always have that faith, to always have that vision, to have the patience, to always believe in the power of dialogue, to adapt. And with that, to be able to, in fact, raise up those people under your charge, to empower them, to enable them to eventually actualize their human dignity and majesty. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always important to us. Please send your email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.